Hello and welcome to As It Is Monday from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. It's March 7th, 2016. It was on this day in 1965 that 600 civil rights marchers were attacked by state and local police in the city of Selma, in the southern state of Alabama. The day became known as Bloody Sunday. Now, here's what's ahead on today's program. The wife of former President Ronald Reagan has died. A new UN report says economic gains from migration are often ignored. A record number of Americans are giving up their U.S. citizenship. We will hear from some of them today. Then, we will take you to a religious center for Catholic monks to see how they and their monastery are adapting to the 21st century. And finally, as we do every Monday, we will bring you Science in the News. This week, Anne Ball tells us about bandages made of material that is very similar to human skin. The bandages can help wounds heal faster. So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. Every day of the year, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And every Monday, we bring you Science in the News. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the voice of America. The wife of former President Ronald Reagan, Nancy Reagan, has died of heart failure at the age of 94. She died in her home in Los Angeles Sunday morning. She had been in poor health in recent years. During her time as the nation's First Lady from 1981 to 1989, Nancy Reagan worked to reduce the use of illegal drugs. After her husband left office, Mrs. Reagan also worked to find a cure for Alzheimer's disease. Ronald Reagan died of Alzheimer's disease in June of 2004. The United Nations has released a report on labor and migration in the Asia-Pacific area that says economic gains from migration are often ignored. Mario Ritter reports.
The report calls for greater cooperation to avoid inequalities and human rights abuses. The United Nations released the report February 29th. It says that in 2013, there were 213 million migrants worldwide. Asia-Pacific countries hosted more than 59 million of those migrants. That number has grown since 1990 and is expected to expand. Hongju Han is Deputy Executive Secretary of the UN's Economic and Social Commission for Asia and the Pacific, UNESCAP. He says the main driver of migration in the region is economics.
economic gains is why migrants are on the move. And we see the migrants largely moving, unlike in other countries, other regions of the world. In Asia, one of the biggest and unique characterization is migration is occurring from south to south, except for, let's say, those going to the Gulf countries.
Each year, about 2 million Philippine citizens leave for work overseas. Also, more than 500,000 workers leave Bangladesh, India, Indonesia, and Pakistan each year. The migrants go to countries that include Brunei, Kazakhstan, Malaysia, the Maldives, Russia, Singapore, and Thailand. But restrictions on migrant workers in some host countries limit their rights and social protections. The UN report says such restrictions are often unjustified and are harmful to human rights. Hongju of UNESCAP says migrants do not drive down wages. He says the report found migrants' impact on local wages and inequality was small.
When you provide migrants with decent work, when you treat migrants as your own, when you assimilate them into your economy and treat them as a national laborer, it really benefits your national economy.
But Phil Robertson says some countries treat migrant workers poorly. He is Asia-Pacific Deputy Director for Human Rights Watch. Robertson says Asian governments, such as Malaysia, prefer short-term irregular migration. This means allowing migrants into the country for a short time. That leaves many migrants in the irregular or underground economy with little protection legally.
You know, driving through all these issues is an exaggerated sense of national security, that somehow these refugees or migrants constitute some sort of threat to the countries. You see this in Thailand where, you know, there's often reference to migrants or refugee mobs. You see this in Malaysia where there's an effort to try to continue to keep refugees out of the formal economy, not giving them the right to work.
Robertson says Southeast Asia's ASEAN economic community needs to develop better policy around migrants. UN economists say migrant trends in the future will be influenced by changes in population, especially where there is aging. The Asia-Pacific Migrant Report 2015 offers ideas on policies with respect to human rights, decent work, and social protection for nationals and migrants. I'm Mario Ritter.
Thousands of Americans are giving up their citizenship. We asked Bruce Alpert to find out why.
Donna Lane Nelson was so upset after giving up her U.S. citizenship that she threw up. "Like the day I was divorced, this was one of the saddest of my life," Nelson wrote of the day in 2011 her paperwork to renounce U.S. citizenship was approved. In 2011, Nelson was one of nearly 2,000 Americans to give up their citizenship. Last year, a record 4,279 people gave up their American citizenship, according to the U.S. Treasury Department. This year, the Google search, "How to Move to Canada," surged as businessman Donald Trump won 7 of 11 Republican contests on Super Tuesday. Peter Spiro is a Temple University law professor. He is not sure if those who oppose Donald Trump would consider leaving the U.S. Trump, if he wins, may be president for only 4 years, 8 years if he wins a second term, and giving up your citizenship cannot be reversed, Spiro said. Most of those giving up their U.S. citizenship do so for tax reasons. The surge, Spiro said, is due to a 2010 law to increase enforcement of an existing law requiring U.S. citizens to pay taxes on worldwide income, not just money earned in the United States. Joyce Angio of Quebec, Canada, gave up her U.S. citizenship last year. She is an English as a second language teacher at Université Laval in Quebec City. Angio never planned to live in Canada, but in 1973, while studying French in Quebec City, she met a man who would become her husband. Angio said she had no idea Americans must pay taxes on income earned outside the United States. Even her father, an accountant, she said, never told her, "Joyce, you'd better file every year because the U.S. law requires it." In 2013, she learned that the U.S. government was ready to collect fines on Americans who did not pay U.S. taxes while living outside the country. "I hesitated for 2 years," Angio wrote in an email to Voice of America. "Lost sleep, read, discussed, debated, cried twice in front of the consul on the date I was given to formally renounce my citizenship. Felt heartbroken the day I had to go back to pick up my canceled passport." U.S. Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew said the federal government has a responsibility to ensure all Americans pay their taxes. "Offshore tax evasion undermines confidence in our tax system and deprives the United States of revenues necessary to protect and provide for its citizens," Lew said in a statement. Donna Lane Nelson lives in Switzerland. She also writes a blog and has reported for trade newspapers. "It was not just the tax burden that led her to give up U.S. citizenship. It was all the additional paperwork," she said. Also playing a role was the refusal of Swiss banks to accept deposits from U.S. citizens. "Banks," Nelson said, "want nothing to do with increased reporting required now by the U.S. government." According to the U.S. Department of the Treasury, Americans living abroad are required to pay income taxes based on their worldwide income. They can exclude up to $100,800 from their income, as well as certain housing costs, the Treasury Department said. The State Department estimates 7.6 million Americans live outside the United States. Better enforcement can bring in an extra $800 million a year to the United States government, according to a congressional report. Spiro, the Temple University law professor, said the cost of filing and paying taxes on Americans overseas is falling most heavily on people of modest means. The United States, he said, is the only major country that taxes its citizens on income earned overseas. As for downsides of giving up citizenship, there definitely are some. Fees for completing the application process went up recently from $450 to $2,350. And before Americans can give up their citizenship, they must settle U.S. tax liabilities covering the last 5 years, according to the Treasury Department. U.S. Tax Services is a private tax services company. It says Americans who renounce their citizenship can still return to the United States for short visits. But longer visits are a problem. For example, if a relative who lives in the U.S. were to become sick, you would not be allowed to simply move to the U.S. to take care of them, Tax Services says in its guide to renouncing citizenship. Or, if your kids end up residing in the U.S., you would not be able to simply move in with them as you grow older. Angio, the Canadian English instructor, said she can use her Canadian passport to continue regular visits with friends and family in the United States. The difference is emotional, Angio said. I'm bitter that I have to use the non-citizen line at the airport. I'm resentful that the immensely wealthy will still find clever ways to illegally hide their money while I had to make a painful decision to renounce. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Now, we take you to a Catholic religious center in the eastern state of Virginia to see how the monastery and the monks who live there are adapting to the 21st century. Our Mary Gottschall went to the monastery recently, and she brought back this report.
On a 500-hectare estate of rolling hills in the Virginia countryside live 11 Trappist monks. There used to be almost 70, but the decision to become a monk is not as popular as it once was. This might explain why. The monks follow the rule of Saint Benedict, which dates from the 6th century. They have given up their worldly possessions. They have promised to remain in the same community under a vow of stability. They agree to remain celibate, and they live separately from the world. And silence is maintained as much as possible. The first rule of Saint Benedict is listen. He believed in a restraint of words. It's a particular message for our era, in which words have become so cheap, explained Father James Orthman. He is originally from New York City and has lived at the Our Lady of the Holy Cross Abbey in Berryville, Virginia, for 39 years. Now he is 65. The Benedictine monk's motto in Latin is Ora et Labora, or in English, pray and work. Each day, the monks pray for 8 hours, sleep for 8 hours, and work for 8 hours. The work can be manual labor, sacred reading, or charity. And they pray. The monks pray 5 times a day, at 3:30 and 7 in the morning, 2 and 5:30 in the afternoon, and 7:30 in the evening. They sing medieval chants in English, and every 2 weeks they pray all 150 psalms, or inspirations from the Bible. By about 7:45 p.m. each evening, they go to bed. But the monks in the abbey are facing a difficult reality. The number of monks has declined since the abbey was founded in 1950. At its peak, there were 68 monks. Today, there are just 11, and many are older than 70. Nowadays, it's hard to recruit new monks, said Father James. It's a huge adjustment in our culture, much more than when I entered 39 years ago. Advertising for monks doesn't work, said Kurt Asherman, a layperson, or helper, who promotes the abbey as a volunteer. The target market for monks is men between the ages of 35 and 55. Men of that age have enough life experience to know they want to join the monastery. Candidates must pass a background check, said Father James. They live at the abbey for 3 months to see if it's right for them. They participate as active members for 1 year, but are not formal members yet. Then they are considered novices for 2 years. They finally take simple vows, then solemn vows. Lastly, they have to sell all their possessions before they are formally monks in the Trappist Brotherhood. Because fewer men have entered the monastic service, the abbey has taken some innovative steps to ensure its survival. We are changing our relationship with the society around us, said Father James. There is an interpenetration and an interaction with non-monastic people. For example, Holy Cross Abbey has launched monastic immersion weekends for both men and women. Those have been wildly popular, said Asherman. During the immersion weekends, you can spend 48 hours living the life of a Trappist monk. People of any religion or no religion can come. There are lots and lots of people who find monastic life to be an interesting lifestyle, said Asherman. But they have wives and children and jobs. Very few have the capacity to give up everything and go to the monastery. The immersion weekend gives people a taste of monastic life. Last year, the Abbey offered a free event on the 100th birthday of Thomas Merton, a famous Benedictine monk. All 50 tickets were claimed in just 2 hours, said Asherman. The Holy Cross Abbey also rents rooms in a retreat house where up to 16 guests can come for weekend or weekday visits. No religious study is required. Guests can come to enjoy the scenery and quiet around the Blue Ridge Mountains and the Shenandoah River. Englishman Ralph Wormley, a friend of George Washington, bought the property in 1730 and named it the Cool Spring Estate. There is an historic house on the grounds that was built around 1784. It was built by the Wormley family and sits next to the abbey. The monks also raise money by selling fruitcake and creamed honey in their gift shop. In addition, they sell hooded T-shirts with the Abbey logo, scented soaps, and biscotti. The monks are self-sufficient financially, and they become innovative about raising income from the estate. They rent pasture to a local farmer who grazes Black Angus cattle on the property. They lease land to another farmer who is growing organic vegetables. And they offer eco-friendly burials that are less expensive than usual burial methods. You can be buried with a monument made out of local rocks. Last November, we won a Lord Fairfax Award for an outstanding farm since 2010, Father James noted proudly. The first Benedictine monastery in the U.S. was St. Vincent in La Trobe, Pennsylvania. It was founded in 1832 by Boniface Wimmer, a German monk. He brought Benedictine nuns from Germany to serve in Pennsylvania and other states. Today, there are more than 2,000 Benedictine monasteries on 6 continents, according to Christian Spirituality, the classics. Holy Cross Abbey is one of 12 Trappist monasteries for men and 5 for women in the United States. Trappist monasteries are also called Cistercian monasteries, and they follow the rule of Saint Benedict. Deep prayer is practiced in other religions as well. Zen Buddhists emphasize meditation as a path to spiritual enlightenment. Sufism explores an inner mystical dimension of Islam. And Kabbalah is a branch of Judaism that promotes spirituality through mysticism. I'm Mary Gottschall.
Scientists say new human-made materials that have electronic sensors in them could help make bandages valuable tools for healthcare workers. Ann Ball is here now with our weekly Science in the News report.
Simple bandages are usually seen as the first line of attack in healing small to moderate wounds and burns. They are easy to use, covering up the damaged skin and giving it time to heal. Scientists are now developing bandages with technology currently used in popular wearable devices such as smart watches and fitness trackers. They have begun adding small sensors of all kinds to bandages and making them more sensitive. Scientists are also making new materials called hydrogels. Hydrogels are similar to human skin. Researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology have found a way to combine these two technologies. They created a stretchy polymer with firmness similar to human soft tissue. The new combination product has titanium wires that lie in a zigzag or Z-shaped design. The wires connected to electronic sensors stretch easily without breaking contact with the sensors. The MIT researchers also created strong links between the electronic sensors and the hydrogels. Shenhe Zhao is an associate professor of mechanical engineering. He said the researchers put electronic devices, such as sensors, into the new material. They used a different device to put medicine in the damaged skin. The resulting product becomes a kind of smart wound dressing, one that can react to changes in the skin around it. For example, Zhao said, if there is a sudden increase in temperature, the wound will send out a command. That is when the controlled drug delivery system can deliver a specific drug to that specific location. LED lights in the bandage could warn patients and doctors about changes in different areas. Medication quickly spreads across the bandage through tiny passageways. Researchers say the new material can be used both on the skin and inside the body. Zhao told VOA that he and his team are working hard and hope to get clinical tests soon, but it will be some time before these smart bandages reach the hospital or drugstores. Zhao said he hopes eventually the bandage, will have a broad application. In the future, such products might even contain a computer chip, which would give it more power to analyze what is needed. I'm Ann Ball.
Well, that's our program. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz reporting from Washington. Thanks for spending some time with us today. Jonathan Evans will be here tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with As It Is Tuesday, the weekday Learning English broadcast, webcast, and podcast from The Voice of America.